Hi everyone. I'm really excited to be here, and I want to thank the Ann Arbor District Library for having me here, especially Aaron Helmrich for inviting me and letting me bring my knitted weirdness to your town. So my name is Anna Horakovec. You can just call me Anna. Some people call me Anna Mochi Mochi because it's a little easier to say. I'm from Brooklyn, New York, and I'm going to introduce to you my world of Mochi Mochi Land today. First, I'd like to just see how many knitters or crocheters we have. We can draw stuff with them, that's great. And how many people just like to make stuff with their hands? I hope that's almost everyone. Okay, great. So Mochi Mochi Land is this imaginary world that I've been making with my hands for about the past 7 years. And it's gotten really big, but I've been making it all just one stitch at a time. And this is a colorful, cozy world with an exploding population. Sometimes it's big and peaceful. And it's always fun. So Mochi Mochi Land is what happened when I took a break from doing what I thought was expected of me and my life and my career and thought I should be doing, and instead I let my creative side take over my life for a while. And for me, this meant combining my hobby of knitting with my love of stuffed animals and cute characters. And what started out as just an amusing diversion 7 years ago has become this really big cast of characters, and they occupy an expanding and evolving world, and it's even a little bit beyond my control at this point. So I grew up in Oklahoma in the 1980s, surrounded by a lot of imaginative and strange characters, many of whom are probably very familiar to you. Like The Sneetches by Dr. Seuss, Pee-wee's Playhouse, and The Muppets. So all of my favorite books and TV shows when I was growing up featured these strange imaginary worlds that were inhabited by really unusual characters. And when I was in high school, I had the opportunity to spend a year in what seemed to me like the ultimate strange imaginary place. Was Japan. So I was an exchange student in Japan for a year, and I lived with a family and every once in a while wore the kimono. And of course when I was there I learned that Japan is a very real place, and it's complicated and has very interesting culture and history. But the promise of a world full of unusual characters was definitely fulfilled for me when I saw businessmen reading comics on the subway and adult women carrying around like Hello Kitty cell phones. I thought that was pretty cool. And fashionable department stores sold these cakes in the shape of pandas. So I just loved the way that in Japan I saw that all ages seemed to embrace adorable characters and make them a part of their lives. Yeah. Ta-da. So in Japan, I discovered lots more of these different worlds, like the charming and mysterious films of Miyazaki Hayao, like Totoro. And maybe some people know this. This is exactly. So later, I fell in love with Katamari Damacy, which is a video game. If you're not familiar with it, it's actually one of the simplest video games. It's very easy to play. But you play a little prince who's the son of the king of all the universe, and you have to recreate the universe basically by rolling up everything on Earth into a giant ball. So it doesn't, logically it doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's really fun because it makes this whole world, and you get to see the world from starting from little tiny objects like puzzle pieces all the way up into, you roll up trees and clouds and then stars, and it's really fascinating. This is Kogepan. He's one of my favorite characters from Japan, and he shares some similarity with Hello Kitty, that type of character. where the expression is very simple. Sometimes they don't have a mouth. He has a mouth, but just very simplistic features. But you actually, I feel like because of that, you can read a lot of emotions into this type of character. And I think maybe that appeals a little bit more to adults as well as children. And kogepan means burnt bread in Japanese. So he's a little piece of burnt bread. He stayed in the oven too long. So he's always a little bit sad because there are other happy breads that didn't get burned. But but I really always liked him as a character because you kind of feel a little bit of pity for him and you want to make him your friend. And I felt like I hadn't encountered that type of character in the United States quite as much. So yeah, I loved the nuance of characters in Japan and the broad range of emotions that you could find within them. And I liked the idea, of course, that I didn't have to grow out of these characters and toys. So I actually also learned to knit in Japan. One of my host sisters taught me. She taught me how to make a scarf, just really basic knitting each row. So I ended up with this big fluffy purple fun fur scarf. And it was really fun to learn to make something with my hands and then have something that I had made when I was done, something physical that I could hold and I could use. And this is not my host sister, but I thought it was a funny picture from the 70s, a Japanese knitting magazine that I found. So after my year in Japan, I returned to the U.S. for college, and I studied Asian languages and film. And I continued knitting as a hobby, though, throughout college, like something to do between writing papers, and it was a nice way to relieve some stress and do something with my hands and see that result grow physically. And with the encouragement of my boyfriend's mom, who's actually my mother-in-law now, I learned to do a lot of different kinds of things. She was a big crafter, so she taught me different techniques, and she encouraged me to try different types of patterns. So I learned how to make sweaters and skirts and hats and gloves and all different types of knitted things. And then a couple of years after college was when I actually started making toys. So what happened was I still loved knitting, but I kind of ran out of people to make scarves and hats for, and I felt like I had enough myself, so I was looking for something a little bit different to do. These are the first toys that I knitted, little blobby guys. And I was, at the time, I was actually working at an art gallery in New York, and the blob shape is based on the logo of the gallery that we had. One of my coworkers had designed a logo that was this weird blob. It just looked a little bit like a creature, but it was a silhouette. And I thought it would be fun to make something to kind of commemorate our time together. And so I sketched out the shape of the logo. And because I had learned a few techniques from making various things, I knew how to do some basic shaping with stitches to make that kind of shape. So I just made a front and a back, and I stitched them together, and that pink one is the first one that I made. And as soon as I stitched on some eyes and it was looking back at me, it was this really magical moment for me. Like suddenly we had a relationship and it had feelings about me, and I was really in love. Like I knew that I had to make more of these toys. And I started getting a lot of ideas and filled up a sketchbook and wanted to make all sorts of toys. This is one of my earlier ones. This is Sleepy Snake and Mischievous Mouse. So as you can see, the snake can actually eat the mouse, but they're just playing, so it's okay. But I found it really interesting to incorporate the knitting techniques that I'd learned to make. You can see that there's stripes on the snake, and then also he has ribbing, like you have on sweaters sometimes. So that makes it, his body a little more expandable, and that lets his belly get big. This is another one of my early ones. This is Rainy Cloud. And I liked thinking about different ways to use yarn, in this case to look like raindrops coming down. These are newer guys. These are love bots. They're head over wheels for each other. I've got a whole lot more puns about them, but I won't do all of them. But I always love stuffed animals, and those are usually made using sewing. So, you know, you'd take fabric and cut out the shapes and stitch them together and figure out how to do the different shaping that you need using sewing and cutting and things like that. But I actually discovered that knitting was really, for me at least, a lot more versatile than sewing, because you can create color combinations, you can create textures and interesting shapes, all just with simple techniques and really basic materials. So you don't need a huge supply of things. You can do things just with a few different colors of yarn. So like I can integrate the white and the blue yarn together to make a pattern instead of having a pattern of fabric, for example. Here's another. This is Grouchy Couch. You can actually see him in the display case in the youth department upstairs. These are pigs with wigs. And they're pigs with wigs just because I was looking for a fun word that rhymed with pigs, and it was wigs. So yeah, you can see I used some different stitch techniques to make the different wigs and give them different textures. This is one of my more recent favorites. This is Flushy the Toilet and Professor Plunger. So I love the challenge of also figuring out how to make appliances and other kind of structured objects into soft characters. And especially this guy, like trying to figure out how to do something with interesting angles and shapes and how to do that with knitting is really interesting to me. And I like the idea of making toys that could appeal to kids and adults. I think a toilet is actually one of those, because you might not think of it as an obvious character, but we all are very familiar with toilets. We spend a lot of time with them. We have relationships with them. So a toilet could be, you know, a toy for maybe a toddler who's potty training, or it could be something fun for someone with a sense of humor for their office. And again, the simple features are inspired by Japanese character designs to me, and I think they leave the character a little more open to interpretation. I never studied art or design because I wasn't very good at drawing. And I always thought that you had to be really good at drawing if you wanted to do something artistic, which is kind of silly. But once I started knitting and creating toys, I discovered that I could use sketching as a really great way to develop ideas. So instead of being an end to itself, instead of trying to make a pretty picture, I just use it as a way to think and come up with new ideas. And so I usually sketch something over and over again until I see something take shape that I want to make. So this right here, I was working on a monkey. So I just kind of drew different kinds of monkeys and tried to figure out what I wanted to do with him and what kind of design features I wanted to include. And these are my materials. They're really basic, just yarn and needles. I mostly use double-pointed needles, which are points on both ends there. Scissors. I also use polyester stuffing usually for the inside, and sometimes I'll use some plastic eyes, but that's pretty much it. And I use really simple shapes in my designs, and so I usually have a general idea of how I want to make those shapes develop using different techniques. So I usually just start knitting, and it allows me to experiment a little bit and do trial and error, because I'm not making something to fit someone. It doesn't have to be exact. So I can just kind of see what takes shape. And you can see here I have my sketch over here, so I'm kind of comparing what I've done so far with the sketch. And as I knit, I take some really basic notes. I type them out on my computer as I go. And if I make a mistake, most of the things that I make are kind of small, so it's pretty easy to just backtrack and start again. When a design is in progress, I usually pin the different pieces on temporarily, just kind of see how they can go together and move things around a little bit until I'm happy with the placement of everything. This is my finished monkey. His name is Zaru. And getting from the sketch to the finished monkey in this case just took about 3 days. And it's actually usually the idea that takes the longest, coming up with what I want to make. I decided that he needed a friend. And the second monkey is a bit easier to make because I already have my notes from my instructions for the first time. And it also gives me the opportunity when I'm making a second one to make sure that I wrote down everything that I did right, and it kind of makes sense, and it can be replicated. And when I first started making my designs, in the back of my mind, I told myself that I would just kind of move on to something else when I got tired of knitting toys. But actually, instead of that happening, I found new ways to experiment with what I was making and kind of explore knitting as a medium. So in 2009, I started something that I called the Tiny Challenge. I knitted a little tiny toy every day for a month, every weekday for a month. They're about an inch tall, all of these guys. So I'm using really thin yarn and pretty small needles to make them, but they're very simple, so they only take maybe 2 hours to make. So I was making these every day in 2009, and every day I would post a photo of what I had made on my blog. And I got a nice reaction from people with lots of different ideas of different things to make, which was really wonderful to get that encouragement from my readers. So I ended up extending that challenge to myself for 2 years. Not on a daily basis, but on a weekly basis, I made a new one each week. A little tiny pineapple. Some of these have later become patterns that I've written, but a lot of them are just to kind of see if I can make them. Tiny skunk. So this is a really, making these tiny toys was a great creative challenge for me because I had to think about how to represent a person or an animal or an object in basically the smallest number of stitches that I could. And that means reducing the character to its really essential elements, like so you can instantly recognize it. And that's how you can recognize a skunk. So it's a fun challenge to try to do that. And this is what 2 years of tiny knitting looked like. You can see all sorts of different characters, some of which are more successful than others. And so I'm still knitting these tiny toys, not on a weekly basis anymore, but when I have time to. It's a really nice way to get the creative energy going. See the zombie? And because these miniature toys take a lot less time to make, that means it's really easy to make multiples. And then when you make several little toys, they want to interact with each other. So you want to make little scenes out of them. These are Santas who are fighting over who's the real Santa. I think the one who got his beard ripped off is not going to win. And these are my tiny gnomes. They've kind of become my spirit animal and my little mascot. I'm just always knitting them, and they kind of go everywhere with me. And they've even kind of escaped from my knitting bag, and they've taken up residence in my house, and they've gotten into lots of mischief, including taking baths in my toilet. So my first blobby knitted toys were inspired by the gallery I was working at. So it was a really, it felt like a nice circle of events when I had the opportunity to show some of my knitted creations in that gallery. And this is the first show that I created in 2010, and it's called Greetings from Mochi Mochi. And it was held at the gallery that I worked at, Gallery Hanaho in New York. And I saw it as a great opportunity to think about what Mochi Mochi Land would look like in a physical space and create this land. So it was really fun to just take over this gallery and run wild with it and pack as many characters as I could into it. I tried to make everything interacting and just have as much action as possible and little things for people to discover. Like you can see a little snowman has fallen. He's melting, having a little trouble on the ground there. And the world there was connected all together by a model train that was working and it could go around the track. So I covered it with a knitted covering that's just actually Velcroed on there. And it was my favorite part because it was fun to have this movement within the show. And it actually was intermittent, so it was fun to like surprise people by turning it on and having the train go around. This whole project was a huge challenge of time and will. And the base of it, the green part, the grass, actually took up the most time because I hand knitted it. And it took months. It was a very long process, and it was a very hot summer that I made it, and that's me on my couch sweating under that wool. It took a very long time. And for the bigger structures, like the mountains, there's a mountain that the train goes through, I needed to use something on the inside that would really hold up the structure of it, instead of using just the fluffy polyester stuffing that I normally used. So I used foam that I got at this weird foam supply store, and figured out how to carve it into certain shapes. And then in that kind of case, I had to do a little bit more measuring and a little bit more math to make sure it would fit the foam properly. And this is what it looked like as I was in progress making this. So this is my apartment floor. It took up most of my bedroom when I laid it all out. So I would just like lay out that big grass and kind of see if it was going to fit the tracks yet. And it just seemed like it never would, but eventually it did. And put in the elements that I had, and I kind of threw in some skeins of yarn to represent what was going to go there later. So that's a look at how it came together. Got a few more pictures of the scenes. This rainbow actually was kind of a challenge because I had to figure out how to get that make the shape, first of all, in foam. And then how to get the stripes to curve with my knitting. So that felt really great when I finally figured that out. And then, of course, I had to add some tiny little fat unicorns. I tried to make all the characters interact. You can see that the swamp monsters are actually eating the unicorns, which is a little sad. But I wanted to incorporate a lot of drama and just a lot of action. And then it is, well, yes. It's something like Elvis. He's kind of overseeing everything and making sure everything is working properly in the world. And they're actually raining raindrops on a little wedding below. And then a year later, I went to Berlin, and I had the opportunity to have a show in a small gallery there. So in this case, I decided to take a little bit of a different perspective on the knitted landscape that I made before and work with the theme of planets so I could create these three-dimensional landscapes. So what I did is created an imaginary solar system complete with this asteroid belt going through the middle of it. And the giant ball of yarn here, he's kind of representing the sun to me, and he's knitting the asteroid belt out of himself. And then at the other end of the gallery, the belt wraps around the snowman planet's neck and becomes a scarf. And each of the planets actually has its own aliens living on it. So these are the snowman aliens that live on the snowman planet. That's his behind right there. So they're all just doing different snowman things. And this is one of my favorites. This is the cupcake planet. And the candles are eating the frosting, as you can see. And then later that year, in 2011, I created one of my favorite projects that I've done. And it was called Gnomes versus Snowmen. The show was built around the idea of taking two characters that maybe are really iconic, everybody recognizes, and making them fight each other. So this show was a little bit more of a story-based. It had a narrative to it. And it was inspired by the Bayeux Tapestry, which I learned about in a documentary about the history of Great Britain. So this tapestry, it's like epic and was made in the, I think it was made in the 11th century, but it depicts the Norman invasion of England. And it's very, very long, and it depicts like the events of this big battle and all that happened. And I thought it was really fascinating how you could walk around and see what occurred. So I kind of went with that idea, and what I did is took a different perspective on it and made it a three-dimensional landscape that's made up of panels that starts on one end of the room and goes all the way around. So this first half is the gnome territory. And then if you go around the room, the second half of the panels are Snowman Land. And the battle plays out as a story going around the room, and there's captions for each piece. So it starts with just one snowball. It comes out of nowhere, and it knocks a gnome unconscious. And the gnomes take their revenge. It gets a little brutal. I tried to stick to kind of cartoony violence. This is the snowman cavalry coming to the battlefront. They're little bunnies. There's lots of snowball-related fighting and had some flattened gnomes happening. This is a snowman of mass destruction that the snowmen are building. And you might think that the snowmen are at a disadvantage because they can melt, but they can also build more troops very easily. So they have that advantage. So in the end, there is a peace agreement. But as you can maybe see, the snowmen actually have their fingers crossed behind their back. So there's no guarantee. And you can actually see some of the scenes from Gnomes versus Snowmen around Ann Arbor this weekend. And including here in the library up in the display case. So I hope you can check that out and keep your eyes peeled. So this year, more recently, I've started integrating some more natural elements into my knitting. And this piece is part of an installation that I made in April called The Woolly Woods. And this was, again, in Berlin, actually. So the idea of it was I took, I thought about a mysterious wood within Mochi Mochi Land and who might be living there. And these little white characters here, they're called Twiggins. So I kind of took them as my main characters and then added some other different animals for them to interact with. And that's what that imaginary forest looks like. So there's lots of, it's very playful, and these characters, the Twiggins, have lots of adventures. Another look. And this project was actually inspired by the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy that came through New York last year. I live near a really big park in Brooklyn that's very beautiful, and actually hundreds of trees came down and lots of branches and twigs fell down too from the wind. It's actually in a higher part of Brooklyn that wasn't flooded, but there was a lot of damage because of wind. And for months you could see scenes like this. I took this picture, I think, in late March, so it was several months that the city was working on cleaning it up. And you could see a lot of branches have come down. So I go to the park a lot, almost every day, and seeing all the branches on the ground made me take a closer look at them, and I could really appreciate how beautiful they were, a lot of them, and different, depending on the different species of tree. And it made me think, like, it's kind of sad that they were all just going to be taken away and destroyed. So I began collecting just a few that caught my eye, and I began wrapping them in colorful pieces of yarn. And at the same time, I knitted a bunch of these little characters, little creatures that could live in the twigs, and I just kind of threw them into a bag as I was going, and then also working on the branches at the same time. And then my favorite part was assembling them. So I let the shape of the twigs tell me, like, what might happen on the twig, and I kind of use those to inform what the landscape is and what's happening, what kind of action would work best. And it's really fun to take these creatures and just kind of pose them around and figure out what they might do. And these have strings attached to them because that just makes them easier to attach. But that's basically what it looks like when I'm working on a piece. And this is what the finished one looks like. It's a piece of monkeys, and then these green guys are the Twiggins, so they're playing with the monkeys. And it's hard to see, but the one on the right is pulling the monkey's tail, and the other one is swinging from the branch. A piece of bats, and the Twiggins are discovering the bats and playing with them and pretending to be bats. And same thing with butterflies. This is one of the larger pieces that was suspended from the ceiling. And they're gathering little blue apples. And I hoped that the show would just make people smile when they saw it and maybe also make them appreciate the beauty that's in these, the simple beauty that's in this, these natural small pieces of nature. Yeah. That's what I like to hear. So my little mochis have made a big step last year when they figured out how to move. So I've been exploring some, you know, different ways of experimenting with my creatures and bringing them to life through animation. And I found a real passion for incorporating just a little bit of technology with my knitting this way. And this is kind of basically what it looks like when I set something up to make one of those animations. I just have a really simple backdrop and I tape it down as much as I can so it doesn't move around too much. I have a few lights and then that's my camera there. And so I'm just taking a series of photos and making small changes in each photo. This is what that particular picture looks like. So I did a little series of this little sumo wrestler and different strange objects that he's wrestling. So that's, he's wrestling a little piece of sushi, and then he's going to go, I think, off and eat him next. This is another one of my favorite ones. This one I'm kind of proud of because it has a little scene change, which was new for me, so that was fun to experiment with. And these are animated GIFs, which you may or may not be familiar with, but it's basically an image file. And what's cool about it is they always just loop. So it's not like a video that has a start and a stop, but it just goes and goes and goes. So it's really fun for me to come up with a concept, an idea that can be repeated and just kind of be something maybe a little bit mesmerizing that you want to stare at for a while. This is how I make my GIFs. There's actually a lot of different ways to do it. I use Photoshop usually. Sometimes I use iMovie when I'm making a little bit of a longer animation. The idea is just really simple. You take a series of photos with little small changes in each photo, and then you put them together. And there's actually a lot of free programs and websites online to make GIFs too. So if you're interested in that, if you just Google it or something, you can find a lot of different options to make them at home really easily. And that's what that particular one ends up looking like. So just really simple, but kind of fun. And I actually took a class on stop motion animation a few years ago, but in a way it discouraged me because it seemed very complex because you had to have the software and the right kind of camera that could work with the software and have the lighting just right and have something that you bolted things into and moved them around. But what I figured out is that since I'm making these little tiny characters, it's really easy to move them around just with using like a toothpick to stick them into the ground with or a straight pin. So I'm not using any fancy, movie techniques or anything like that. It's just all very simple. And because they're so small, it's easy to make small gestures. And I think that works well with the repeated motions as well. So you might be wondering how I find time to do all of this stuff. It helps that I've been able to make knitting into my job. But it's actually not all just about knitting. I don't just knit all day long every day. Mostly what I do is I create patterns so that other people can make the toys that I make too. And I mean, originally I was just knitting these toys for my own amusement, but I learned when I started sharing some photos online on websites like Flickr, I heard from knitters saying that they wanted to make that too, and could they test a pattern for me? So, and I didn't even know what that was exactly, but so quickly they helped me figure out how to write a pattern, and it's really kind of amazing how I can make a pattern like this, and you can see that it's mostly just written text saying what to do line by line with a few photos. This is my pattern for Jumbo Gnome. He's about that large, so he's a much bigger gnome. And this is what one knitter has made out of it. She used her own different stitch patterns for the sweaters, but it was all based off of my guy, and you can see they're just all very cute and different. And what's kind of amazing about writing patterns is it's almost like I'm writing a program, a computer program, and it's being carried out by any number of people who want to make it themselves. But it's always going to be a little bit different because there's all different variables when someone else is knitting, because no two people knit the same way. This is what my website looks like. So I started that in 2007. My husband helped me make it. And so like being online is really huge for what I do. And I didn't even know at first, but there's a big knitting community online, and they're very interconnected and very generous in sharing people. So when I started this website, I started a blog, I posted a few free patterns, and just also photos of what I was making. And then eventually I started making PDF patterns, so just digital files. And so I sell those as downloads, and it's actually a really cool process, you know, because I can knit something once and write the instructions, and then somebody can come on my website, or maybe 5 people or 100 people can come on and buy that pattern and just instantly get it themselves. And I named the website Mochi Mochi Land because I love mochi, which you may be familiar with. It's sticky rice sweet from Japan. And the word mochi mochi has this kind of soft and squishy connotation that I think works really nicely with my designs. And soon after I started my website, another website went online called Ravelry. You probably haven't heard of it unless you're a knitter or a crocheter, but Ravelry is really huge. It's like Facebook for knitters and crocheters. And it's got, I think it's got more than 3 million members now, so it's really big. And it's really the biggest way that people come to find me. And it's a great sharing community where people share ideas and information and also photos of what they're making. So this is one of my popular patterns that I designed a few years ago. It's called Boo the Bat. And I designed him in 2008. And now there's almost 900 different Boos, photos of Boos on Ravelry. So that's just on this one website. And it's just fascinating to see their different personalities. Like I think there's the one on the bottom, there is a Michael Jackson Boo. And over on the right on the bottom, I think is a, I can't remember what they're called, but from The Legend of Zelda, the bats that fly around, if you're familiar with that video game. So just depending on what kind of yarns a person wants to use, you know, they can use different novelty yarns like fluffy or different textures. And then people make their own little changes and embellishments. Sometimes they'll make them to represent a friend of theirs or their daughter or whatever. So it just depends on what kind of mood you're in and who you're making something for and the choices that you make. You can make all different kinds of characters just using the same pattern. And another way that I've reached out to people is through my books. In 2009, I had the opportunity to write a book of patterns with a publishing company. And this is the result of that. It's called Knitting Mochi Mochi. And it was a really fun challenge to try to think up of a collection of patterns, something that can really go together. And then, of course, in a book, it also includes information on how to get started knitting and different techniques that you might not use knitting different things that aren't toys. And also writing a book, I got to work with a great photographer who's a friend of mine named Brandy Simons. And she had me thinking about how to represent my toys in different ways. So we got to place the toys in real people environments. And that also lends itself to storytelling a lot, I think. This is TV Guy. And he's a retired television. He doesn't really work that well anymore. But because he doesn't have to be watched, he can watch whatever he wants to on TV now. So that's where we came up with the concept for this. And it was really fun to go prop shopping and find like just the right TV dinner that would look just kind of perfect and gross to put in front of him. And this is another guy from Knitting Mochi Mochi. This is Confused Moose. He thinks he's a bird. My second book is called Teeny Tiny Mochi Mochi. And it came out of that project that I did of the tiny knitting. So everything is really small, like an inch or 2 inches big in this book. And for this book, it was, you know, when thinking about the photos, it was all about the scale, to show the scale of just how tiny something was and represent it in a really basic way. So this is one of my favorites, a tiny hot dog with mustard. The first time I made it with ketchup, and I put that on my blog, and there was a big uproar because apparently you don't put ketchup on a hot dog. I don't know. So now it has mustard, including my dad. He was leaving a comment like, what is this? This is not right. And even Martha Stewart showed this book on her show last year and gave away copies to the audience members, and that was very exciting for me. I wasn't there in person, but I got to watch it on TV. And I find that writing the books is a really great complement to making the patterns that go on my website because, you know, in a book, the characters have to kind of relate to one another and make sense and go together in a nice group. And of course, the books also reach a wider audience than I do usually for my website. And it's interesting, like with a book, it's a much longer process. After I finish designing everything and we work on all the photos and I write up all the text and I send it into my editor, then I get to wait for a year before it actually comes out. And of course, on my website, I can design something in 3 days and put it up the next day if I want to and get that instant feedback. And this is my most recent book, Super Scary Mochi Mochi. It came out last fall. And this one was really fun because I thought, I started thinking about monsters and creepy things. And I realized that if you're making monsters, that can just be anything. So it was really fun to let my imagination kind of go all over the place. And in this book, there's a section on mix and match monsters. And that's what these guys are on the cover here. So it's just a lot of different body parts and you can put them together in different ways, which is just another fun way to customize your project. And then I took some kind of classic monsters and did a fun little spin on them. These are vampire brats. So they're naughty little toddler vampires. Note the teddy bear with his stuffing coming out of his neck. And this is What to Werewolf. So he is a teenage werewolf. But sometimes he wants to be a werewolf when the full moon is not out. So I made him a little costume so he can wear his little jacket and then pull his hood up and become a werewolf. And this is actually my book that's coming out. It's not out yet, but it's coming out in October. Going in a pretty different direction from the small knits. It's huge and huggable. Mochi Mochi. So I really haven't shown much of this to anyone, so this is kind of an exclusive sneak preview here. That's my niece on the cover, by the way. Isn't she cute? So this book I got really big with. This is Roland the Roly Poly. And I actually don't know. Do you have Roly Polies here? Yeah. Okay, good. So I grew up with Roly Polies, and I was always playing with them as a kid. And I thought he would be a really fun guy to make big. So this guy has decided that he is no longer scared, and he's not going to roll up into a ball, and he's going to hang out and just enjoy the backyard. This is Squidpocalypse. And as you can see, he's got lots of hands for doing lots of things. But actually, he's a really bad driver because he's really distracted, and he wants to do the radio and do everything all at once. And you can actually see him in person right now. He's in the window of the robot supply store at 826 Michigan. So it's very close by. This is another one of my favorite guys. This was an interesting photo to take because we had to figure out how to get him in a bathtub and get all the bubbles around and not get him wet. So these big projects, I use thicker yarn and bigger needles, so it doesn't take like so many times longer to make them. But because they're bigger, I could incorporate some different techniques, and had a lot of fun with that. So look out for that in October. I love seeing what all my characters can do, but really just as exciting for me is seeing the new characters and worlds that other people are making using my patterns as a starting point. So every year I have a photo contest. Actually, I have two photo contests every year, and it's pretty much my favorite part of what I do, is just to get to see what people make. And it doesn't have to be anything too fancy, but just really creative. And this particular knitter used some very adorable handmade objects to create a little circus scene. This person made a tea cozy, and I love how she took the bunnies, which were a different pattern of mine, and made it into a little landscape, a little scene there. This is one of my favorites. Knitman Sampler. It's got great graphic design here too. And I actually met some of the people who made this one. They live in New York, and they were telling me that it was actually a going away present for one of their friends who was moving to a different city. And I just thought that was so sweet because they made different little tiny guys that represented different things to that person and then sent her off with it. But then they also submitted it for the photo contest. I thought that was really cool. And I think it's always fun to combine different characters together and make a scene and have some action going on. That's what this one is. This is another recent favorite of mine. It was actually a series of photos called Kung Pao Chicken. So it's a little caveman, and you can see there's this adorable, like, small illustrated cookbook there, and the poor little chickens are in the fire. But it ends well for the chickens. They actually turn into super ninja chickens, and it's really amusing. And this is actually a full-color photo. So I love that I get to encourage people to use this traditional craft and think about it in different ways. And this is something that I wouldn't have thought of, but this particular knitter just used shades of gray and white and black for this project and made a really cool, brighter Frankenstein scene. So really, it's awesome because I make one thing and write down instructions, and other people take it in just completely different directions than I would have thought of. And that inspires me in turn, so it's this really great positive feedback loop that we've got going on. Most of my contact with knitters is through the internet, but sometimes I get to meet up with them and share my designs in different kinds of events. And a couple years back, I met up with about 30 knitters of various ages in London for a pigeon knitting event. So these are the little pigeons that we made. I was trying to think of what would be a good connection between New York and London, and I thought, well, we both have pigeons. So I tried to make some cute little pigeons, and it's a pretty simple project that doesn't take very much time to make. So after we knitted our pigeons in a park, we all walked them over to Trafalgar Square, which is a really iconic part of London. It's got the big lion sculptures that I'm sure you'd recognize. And it used to be known for having lots and lots of pigeons in the square. And actually, around the year 2000, the city eradicated them, unfortunately. So they're really, I mean, you can find pigeons in London, but really not in Trafalgar Square. So some people that I was knitting with had grown up in London. And as we were making the pigeons and walking them over, they told me stories about how, you know, when they were a child, they used to play with the pigeons and feed the pigeons and how they kind of missed those. So it was fun to repopulate the square with these pigeons. And you can see that they're all different, again, just because of different yarns that we were using and different, you know, techniques. That's a view of our different pigeons. And I love that there's so much variety just with that simple pattern that you can get. And it's kind of like we're celebrating where we're all coming from by each making our own pigeons. And I think there's a real joy and excitement that comes from knitting something completely impractical just for the fun of it. Like, I think making this flock of pigeons was a little bit more of a bonding experience than if we'd been making hats together, perhaps. And, of course, we drew a small crowd of tourists and other people wondering what we were doing. And I think people were a little confused, but they were all smiling when they saw that we were taking pictures of these silly little pigeons. So most of us took our pigeons home with us that day, but a few of us chose to set them free, and the pigeons are living lives of their own right now somewhere. And that's it. Thank you for letting me share my work with you.
I just wonder if you're using only wool yarn. And anything you'd like to say about the quality of what you're using?
Mm-hmm. I use a lot of wool. I really like to work with wool just because of the feel of it. But one thing that's really great about toys is you can use practically any kind of material. Sometimes I work with acrylic because it's very durable and it usually comes in really bright colors. And sometimes I use more novelty yarns. Me personally, I often stick with the basics because I like to experiment with shape more than texture of yarn, but I've seen people make the toys out of pretty much every kind of yarn, and they can always turn out differently, but really fun.
I'm just curious how many shots kind of on average go into some of the shorter moving pieces.
Yeah, so the little animations when I'm making a GIF, it's usually between, I would say, like 10 and 30 different photos. And then I've made a few longer ones that are more like 50 or so. But yeah, it can be even less than that. And you can see that some of them are more jerky than others. So it just depends on what kind of action I'm making.
How many gnomes do you have?
That's a good question. Well, when I made that big show that has the gnomes and the snowmen, I know I knitted about 200 just for
That's
that show.
A lot.
It is a lot. And I've always got some around, though, but I give them away all the time to people, too, because they're really great to make quickly and then give to a friend or something.
For the gnomes versus snowmen thing, how long did it take to, like, do all the gnomes and all the snowmen and figure out what kind of weaponry they were going to have?
Let's see. I didn't have quite as much time as I wanted, so I actually had some help making the snowmen. I made all the gnomes myself, but I forgot to mention this. I had about 5 knitters who were really great and helped me make some of the snowmen, so that helped a lot. And then the base of it, like the grass and the snow, I made that using a knitting machine, which also helped save me a lot of time. And then for the scenes, I just came out, first I started with a basic story, and then I kind of measured how big it would be, and then divided up how many panels, and then just figured out what I wanted to go on each panel. So the whole thing took about 3 months. It was really fast.
For like a beginning knitter, what like advice would you have for someone who wants to create a little toy but maybe finds it a bit intimidating?
Yeah. Okay. So the designs that I make are pretty much intermediate. Like I don't suggest someone to try starting out with something like a toy, but it's pretty easy to get to that step. So if somebody's never knitted before, I suggest first knitting a scarf, something really basic, and then next move on to something circular like a hat or gloves, where you use the double-pointed needles. And then after that, you're ready for toys, which is the same basic idea, but just a little bit smaller and incorporates smaller stitch counts, which can be a little tricky when you start out. But it's all based on knit and purl. So if you can do those two, then you really can tackle like anything. And it looks a lot more complicated than it is.
When you did the stop action, how did you make them fly without any strings showing?
That one where he's flying, actually what I did was the little backdrop that I have, the set is made of styrofoam. So it's 2 pieces of styrofoam that I've covered with knitting. And so when I make a guy fly, what I do is actually take a toothpick and I stick it into his back and just stick it right into the back and then move it around. So I don't even have to Photoshop it out or anything because you just don't see it. So it's like I try to get the angle so it doesn't show up in the photo. But it's pretty simple.
It looked really good.
Thank you.
Have you made any of your videos to download as screensavers?
No, that's a great idea.
I would love one. I'm just saying.
You've got me thinking about that then.
Have you ever experimented with felting?
Like needle felting?
Or machine felting after you knit
after
something?
Knitting. Yeah, actually, it was when I was first making toys, I felted a lot of them. So I think the snake and mouse, and actually the rain cloud, are both felted. It's kind of a light felting, so you can't necessarily tell. But when I first made toys, I found it really fun to kind of make them fuzzy and stuff. And then I think I just ended up like getting a little less patient. Like I just wanted to have it be done. So I don't really do felting so much anymore. But it's a great technique. And all you have to do is, I think it's better to maybe move up a needle size, make it a little bit looser, and then it'll tighten it up and make it nice and fuzzy.
know, you mentioned, I'm probably not pronouncing his name right, but I really love his work too, Hayao Miyazaki.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was just wondering, they have, you know, real human beings in those worlds, but they're kind of surrounded by all this beautiful fantasy stuff. Have you ever put any real children or real human beings in your worlds?
I have to a little bit of an extent. Some of the photography in my books incorporates people. So I really like the idea of people interacting with the toys. And in my first book, Knitting Mochi Mochi, there's some wearable toys, which was interesting to think about, like how that could be, a toy could be part of your body. So I've done a little bit of that, yeah. But that's a really interesting direction that I haven't gone quite that much into, and maybe I will in the future. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thank you.